Welcome to another episode of The Rundown. It's the podcast where we talk about movie shows, anything we've seen on movie theaters to YouTube. I'm your host, Bruno. Today, I'm joined with my fellow co-hosts, Scott and Pedro. And we have a friend, Paul, who's going to give us some thoughts on the new Flash movie that he recently saw. And then our main topic is going to be Arnold, which is a three-part documentary about Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is available on Netflix. So what's good, guys?
Let me just get out of the way. I'm pumped up to talk about the Arnold documentary. Let's just get that out. Let's get the puns out of the way.
Pumped up. There was puns all throughout, from the guests to the show itself, to the news anchors on the show itself, and then back to, it was a world of puns. There is a special guest on there, Scott, that I do want to mention that I'm sure you got a kick out of. But let's just start with a quick roundtable of what we've been watching recently. I'm actually going to go first this time just because I went to the movies for the first time in like 8 months. It was really slow day at the office. So I caught the matinee of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Any of you guys seen that yet or
no? No, I'm dying to see it.
Okay. It's really good. It's really good. Recommend it. The time, total running time scared me off a little bit. It's like two hours, 20 minutes, but everything is kind of like that these days when you're dealing with superhero stuff, but really good. Every frame is like a painting in that thing. And then one of the things that stands out, which I'm sure you guys have read or heard, is like every time he goes into another dimension, it takes on the look of the artist who sort of drew or designed that world. So it is really like jumping from one comic book to another comic book to another comic book. The ending is a little abrupt because it is connected to a third movie so this is going to be a trilogy. But I really, really, really liked it. So I recommend you guys watch that.
One thing that was like really exciting about it, and it's not like a spoiler, but in the trailer, you see them come into live action dimension. And yeah. It's like, it's Venom's dimension.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I didn't pick that up at first. It's the deli lady from Venom. And there's one or two other moments that are live action as well. So it's kind of a mixture of a lot of different styles. So they clearly had a lot of fun.
Were you a fan of the original?
Yeah, I did see the first one. I think I saw that one in theaters as well. I saw it only once, so I didn't remember the whole story. Mainly that a super important part of the story was that so Miles Morales, he was bit by a radioactive spider that came from another dimension or Spider-Verse, and the Spider-Man in his universe died, and then it bit him unintentionally. So he became like Spider-Man, but it wasn't like his destiny. And that's a theme in this second movie as well.
And if you want to get meta, the whole reason for Miles Morales was because of Community, an episode of Community where Childish Gambino was wearing Spider-Man pajamas in the intro. And it made the creator of Miles Morales say, hey, like in reality, anybody can be Spider-Man, anybody. Because there was a lot of hate on the internet about him wearing, he can never be Spider-Man. Look at his skin color. He can never be Spider-Man. And this guy was like, oh yeah, I'm going to show you who could be Spider-Man. And then came Miles Morales. So that was a really cool story.
Wait, that's the story of I know there was like a Twitter campaign, Donald for Spider-Man, because he wanted to play.
Donald Glover, yeah.
Yeah, but Miles wasn't based on that. Miles, I think, was originated way before that, no?
No, I could be wrong, but I'm almost 99% sure that's when it came about. And he created Miles Morales based off of that. Mm. He's fairly new. He's not like, he hasn't been in the comic book universe for very long. And he
like
created
15 years. Oh, okay. I thought he was like an early 2000s creation.
I think it was second season of Community. It was, I forgot exactly the episode, but I remember watching it because I was telling my daughter about it. And I was like, the creator purposely did it because of all the backlash. And he was like, no, anybody can be Spider-Man. It's just your interpretation of it.
It's Scott, I know you're on Google right now. What's the story behind this?
What makes you say I'm on
Google? I know you got the double monitors there. You're going back and forth.
No. I'm doing something else on the other computer. No Googling going on over here. But yes, I may be Googling on my computer right now, but keep going. I'm not here.
Okay. No, that's a cool story. I didn't know that. I knew the connection between Donald Glover and Spider-Man. And they actually, he does make an interesting cameo in this movie that you probably will never guess. And he's also, he makes a cameo in Tom Holland's Spider-Man as well, in the first one.
I have it here. It's Glover played Troy Barnes in Community.
Community, yeah.
Who inspired Brian Michael Bendis, the writer for Marvel Comics, to create Miles Morales, the first Black Hispanic Spider-Man for Marvel Comics. So it's cool, a little like bit of trivia.
Yeah. I didn't know it was directly tied to him. That's awesome. What about you guys? Anyone see anything that sort of stood out?
Well, I actually was watching something that probably you would entirely never think about, but I've been watching Restaurant Impossible on the Food Network with Robert Irvine. There's only 21 seasons, so if you have nothing to do, watch it. You know, it certainly will pass the time, which is basically him going into restaurants, and he goes, okay, why do you need my help? And he sits them down, and they go, well, we haven't been making any money. He goes, well, look at the place, blah, 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 blah. And he brings in these two designers, and they take everything out, the tables and everything, and goes, see, your restaurant was completely taken to the bare floor in a matter of 5 minutes. How does it feel? And he always comes up with three dishes, and it always is three dishes. It's like, and I always show those people that the customers eating those things, like, this is so delicious, but, you know, by the way, there's other stuff that are on their menu. But he, like, saves the day every single time.
So this reminds me of a show. I feel like you watch a lot of shows that I would other watch if I'm, like, stuck in a hotel room because I'm traveling for somewhere. And you turn on the TV and they just have, like, CNN reruns of these.
Okay, all right. I admit it. I live in a hotel room, but go on.
Is this the show? So do they focus on, like, the business of the restaurant? There's another restaurant show that I like where they focus on, like, the money aspect. Like, and this money guy goes in and he helps them get out of debt. And by the end of the day, they either, like, sell the restaurant or they make, like, some big sacrifice to restore it.
This more focuses on the story and just to revamp the restaurant, not necessarily on them becoming lucrative, but the point is for them to be lucrative to save the restaurant, and that's why it's called Restaurant Impossible. It's to make the impossible possible. But they do focus on the emotional aspect of why there's usually a disagreement between the owners or the people who work there, so on and so forth. It's entertaining, and he has, like, this, it depends on who they are, who the people are, that he goes in very aggressively.
Okay. Anything else come across? I do want to mention something else at the end, too, that I just remembered I saw.
I finally watched Jury.
Oh, my God. Yo, Jury has been on every podcast episode for the past month and a half. Talking about that.
No,
I finally caught it, and, like, it was okay. It wasn't great, but it was entertaining, and it had a couple of good, really good moments. Yeah. When the guy, the filing cabinet collapsed on the guy and he fell on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. There was another moment that stood out. Oh, when Jane Madison was on the bed, jumping on the bed to help them. Like,
oh, the sex scene?
Yeah. That was because the guy was like, James, jump a little slower. And the girl was like, faster. It was just like that back and forth was great. But I finally saw that. So that was pretty good. And I've been watching Based on a True Story on Hulu.
That's the name?
Based on a True Story. And it's jumping on the true crime podcast fame going on right now. It's kind of like Only Murderers in the Building.
Okay. I like that show.
Been on it. They found, like, a serial killer and they got him to do their podcast so they won't turn him in. So it's a real-life serial killer doing the podcast.
Oh my God, it's with this actress.
Haley, whatever, from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, she was also in like the, she played a stewardess on like, or flight attendant, who also like
the flight attendant.
Yeah, yeah. So very similar, it feels like.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I know they're jumping on the bandwagon of like true crime podcast, but it's a cool concept.
Nice. Pedro? Pedro's been quiet. He's gonna drop a bomb right now.
No. I've been just casually viewing stuff. I haven't really sought out anything in particular. I got a 7-day free trial of Showtime, so I've been trying to check out all their stuff before time runs out. And they have, to my surprise, they have a couple good documentaries on there. Some good music documentaries. I just saw one on the musician Sinead O'Connor.
Wow.
Famous or infamous in the early 90s.
Yeah, what was her, I remember as a kid just hearing that name so much. What was her sort of claim to fame there, aside from the music, of course?
She just started, she was like very political, had her own opinion on things.
Gotcha.
Right from the jump, like the second she became pregnant. So she became pregnant right when her first album was being recorded. And that was like something that was sort of controversial. The music label had a problem with it and everything. And you don't really see that, you know, a lot of people that are, especially at a young age, like at age 19, 20, who are about to become a celebrity or a big famous person, they kind of like, you know, the management and everything kind of, yeah, they draw the line. They want them to be a certain way. They want them to be marketable. So that was interesting. I also saw a documentary. I believe this one was on Prime, on Amazon Prime. It's called Shiny Happy People, based on the TLC show of the Duggar family, which was a reality show that followed a family that had, I think it was like 21 kids or something
like that. The poster, they had mad kids on that poster.
Yeah. Yeah.
The show on TLC was called 19 Kids and Counting.
19 Kids and Counting, yeah.
It was on for, I believe, 7 seasons starting in 2008. I never watched it. There was too many kids, too many people, too many storylines.
How many camera persons on that shoot, man?
They had a bunch of spinoffs. They kept making a season every time like a new kid would be born. And yeah, it's really interesting story. I mean, it gets pretty dark because there's some like abuse that happened in that family, and they get into like the whole culture of like this like fundamentalist like religion that they were following.
It's a multi-episode doc.
Yeah, I believe there's only 4 episodes though, so it's short.
Okay.
It's not like an entire season. But yeah, it was interesting to see how the show was like. They basically like presented it as, yeah, these wholesome, like happy people that, you know, they can do no wrong. They're so innocent and everything, but there's like there's more to that. And there's like a controversy where the father was making all the money and he wasn't giving it to the kids, and he like convinced one of the kids to have a spinoff show, and he was making the money off of it. They didn't get paid off of it. So
was most of their money coming from the TV?
Yeah, the show was like TLC's biggest hit. It was time.
I don't remember this at all.
It was at the time where like the TLC, where it went from like the Learning Channel to like TLC to what it is now. I don't know what it is.
It's like trash TV.
It's
John and Kate plus 8, and then the divorced.
It's under the Max umbrella now, but this was around the time that the network changed, and it became really popular because of this show. So they were just throwing money at this guy, the patriarch of the family, to just, you know, continue to film and churn out seasons and just make content on it. So yeah, they credit the show as, you know, the show that boosted TLC to what it is now. You know, so just...
Yeah, because they went from that to what I mentioned before, the Kate and John and Kate plus eight, and then they got divorced, and then they each had their spinoffs, and then they also had those like creepy beauty contest show with children.
Yeah, and now they have all these weird shows that follow like these weird people, like these 600 pound,
oh yeah, the
800 pound sisters or something. It's kind of like
the little people show.
Yeah, they started a whole like genre of like cringe watching. Yeah, some people just watch. Yeah, some people just watch it. Just
Hoarders. Remember that show, Hoarders?
Oh my god, disgusting.
Dance Moms was afterwards, but there was Little People Big World that started before that, and then John and Kate Plus Eight started before the Duggars, the 19 and Counting. It was in 2007.
Yeah, they got
it. So it was all around the same time. Yep. They're all available on Discovery Plus. Want to catch up?
HBO rolling over in his grave right now with sitting on the shelf next to John and Kate Plus Eight.
So yeah, I've just been casually just watching that stuff. And then I watched Renfield, which was a movie I suggested we all watch. I know a while back we all saw the trailer and we were all interested in it.
Yeah, so we'll talk about it briefly. I want to move on a little bit, but I did, like I told you, I did have it kind of in the background, so I did sit through a couple of the scenes. But I didn't get a good full picture of it, and what I did see didn't really like hold my attention for too long. I was doing a few other things. What did you feel? Because I felt the trailer was super strong. It looked really good.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, the story isn't anything to write home about. It's not like a must watch or anything, but I'm a fan of the horror comedy genre, and it was fun. It was a fun movie. Some of the practical effects that they had, like the makeup on Nick Cage when he goes full like Dracula and everything.
And it was like evolving too, because early on he's kind of decrepit and hungry for blood, and then he kind of becomes, you know, final form.
Yeah, as he's being fed and as he's feasting on human blood and becomes a full Dracula.
There's one scene, I don't know where exactly they are, but the apprentice is, he gets into like, I guess he's like trying to find food for Nick Cage's Dracula character, and he kills a bunch of guys, and then when Dracula shows up, he's like, "You made a mess of it. This guy doesn't even have a head. How am I supposed to eat this?"
Yeah.
So it does have good comedic moments. Yeah, Awkwafina is in it too. She's great.
Yeah, that was surprising that she was in a big role like that. Well, I guess not, you know, it's not a big movie, a big release, but she's a central character, you know. She's like probably like one of, she's one of three of the main characters in it. And funny thing, this is Nick Cage's second vampire movie. He had a movie called, he had a vampire movie early on in his career. I believe it was called A Good Night's Kiss, was it? Vampire's Kiss, I'm sorry, called Vampire's Kiss. He must be at the point of his career where, like, he's already done that type of movie. He's doing it for the second time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just want to mention real quick that the new season of Black Mirror dropped, I don't know, some point last week. I did watch the first episode. I tried to watch it twice. I fell asleep both times, but it was also like very late in the day when I at the end of like two full days. So I didn't sit through it. I did notice that every episode is like star studded now. So you just see a lot of familiar faces.
There's a big marketing push behind this season, right? Like I saw the trailer and I saw nothing but like A-list actors on there.
Mostly
A-list actors. What did you think of that first episode? I saw the first and second episode.
It didn't, Black Mirror for me is a show I really, really, really like, but there are some episodes that I don't like at all. So I'm more of like, I'm all in on the concept and what they're trying to do, but with the understanding that some of them just don't hit at all. And I think that one is probably one that was more in the middle for me. But I'm excited to watch the rest of the season. You liked it?
It was pretty meta. I love the concept of an up-to-date Twilight Zone since the Keenan Peele one didn't take off. They had like two seasons of the Keenan Peele one, and then it went, you know, they didn't do it anymore. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. So to have Black Mirror back is pretty cool. The second episode I didn't like a lot. The first one I liked a little bit better. Not that it was outstanding, but it was okay.
Yeah, yeah, they're kind of hit or miss, but I love... I'm a huge Twilight Zone fan, but again, same thing. Some of them are just bad, right? Some of them are great. Yeah, I love that stuff. I did just want to mention, I read in a tweet, David Lynch was seen shooting a film in West Hollywood. So that's exciting because I don't think he's put out a movie in
years.
Yeah, we'll be around for that when that drops.
I love David Lynch, man. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yeah, he's been super quiet. He did do the Twin Peaks, The Return. I don't know if anybody sat through that. That was like 17 episodes, and they were just like crazy. That was a wild show. Really, really tough to sit through, but also infinitely curious.
Well, so was the original.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's pivot. Paul, I want you... You saw The Flash recently. I haven't seen it. I'm sure these two guys probably haven't seen it either. And I'm going to let you sort of take it away and just, I think we can do a spoiler session. I'm not going to see it in the movies. And by the time I catch it on
Max. Okay. I'm not sure how deep you want me to get about it.
Yeah, roll with it. So give us a little bit of background. Just tell us, like, give us the setup. What is the movie about, like, on the surface level?
I love DC and I really appreciated the Snyderverse. And I think what DC did to him was messed up.
Is this the first movie of the new...
No, it's the end. It's basically like the last movie. They're going to do Aquaman 2, but this is basically the end of the Snyderverse.
So this is the end of the old... This is before it pivots to the new creative person.
They're going to do this, Aquaman 2, and they're going to do Blue Beetle. But according to James Gunn, Blue Beetle's the first character of the new universe. And Superman Legacy is going to be the first movie of the new DC Universe.
Why even finish it at this point?
That's the problem.
Finish the universe?
It's so
they got to get Ezra out of jail.
They got all this hype on the new universe. Like, just why even finish it?
It's bittersweet because what's going on with Ezra Miller and people know this is the end and they're going to start a whole new universe. So people are like, why am I even going to go watch it? I like Snyder and I like what he did. And to see this really feeds off of his movies, like his Justice League, the Snyder Cut. It's not off Josh Whedon's.
Was this movie a launch pad for the new sort of creative direction that they're taking the characters in and also a chance to wrap things up? No?
No. They filmed three different endings for this movie. Three different endings and they showed one. No. I'm saying they filmed them. But they only showed the last one throughout it because this movie's been going on. Production's been going on for a long time.
Set up the movie real quick. Like, what is the plot?
So it's basically their interpretation of Flashpoint. Flashpoint is where Barry Allen, you know, goes back in time and saves his mom. And because of that, it's the butterfly effect and it has massive repercussions throughout all the multiverses.
And he goes back in time because it's like his superpower. He's so fast that he can get to this point.
And his mom got killed by his greatest villain. And he, not only that night did he lose his mom, but he also lost his dad because his dad got convicted for murdering his mom, which he didn't. So in that night, Barry lost both of his parents. So it was a crucial point in his life, you know? So in this, they kind of did a flashpoint where he went back. But they couldn't incorporate a lot of stuff. You know, they couldn't incorporate some of the stuff with Batman. Like in the original Flashpoint, he goes back and Batman is actually, as Bruce was killed as a child in Crime Alley. And his dad...
Wait, it's literally called Crime Alley?
It's something like that. Thomas Wayne, he ended up surviving. And he became Batman, not the son.
Oh,
and...
Yeah.
He became like a really like hardcore version of Batman, not holding back. And his mother went crazy after losing her son, and she ended up becoming the Joker. So that's how the comics took it. But in this one, he went back and he just got so frustrated that he couldn't save his dad. And he's like, maybe if I change one little thing. Like, his mom went to the store and she forgot to get an extra can of tomato sauce. So she asked the dad to go out. And while he was out, an intruder came in the house. They didn't show who it was and killed the mom. So Barry's like, I'm just going to change one little thing. Mm-hmm. Make her not forget the can of tomato sauce. And then all this came in. And so when he came back to his reality, he got pushed out of the time zone by this, like, the evil guy in black that you don't know who it is yet. And he fell into his, what he thought was his timeline, but 10 years earlier when Man of Steel took place, and he ran into a younger version of himself. So it's a lot going on, but
yeah,
I thought the movie had a lot of heart. It had a lot of great, you know, comedy, but being brought back by heart. And I thought it was really well done. But again, it's bittersweet. It's the end of a universe that's not going to be existing anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's the main character is somebody who's going through legal trouble that people don't want to go out and support.
Yeah, he didn't even do any press for the movie, I heard.
No, he only showed up at the last thing because of what he's going through. And it was a hard hit. If this movie had come out 4 or 5 years ago, it would have been an absolute, like, highly acclaimed movie to go see. One of DC's probably best movies. I enjoyed it a lot. Okay. You know, it's not like Dark Knight or anything like that, but it was really good.
Is this the first Flash movie from the DC?
Yeah. Films? He was like in Justice League and stuff, but this is his own standalone movie, like the first one. And Ezra did an amazing job because he had to portray himself, like current timeline, and his 10-year younger version of himself, which was this annoying, like, brat who hadn't gone through the suffering, because the real timeline Barry ended up saving his mom. So 10 year prior Barry never went through that loss. So he was just like this whiny millennial, like, whatever kid. And he didn't go through that suffering. He didn't know what true sacrifice was. And there's present day Barry dealing with his younger version. And he's like, man, wake up. You don't know what's happening right now. Like, we need to take care of this. And then Zod shows up and it's this whole thing. And they go find Batman, but it's not Barry's Batman. It's not, you know, the Bruce Wayne he knows. It's Keaton, an 80-year-old Keaton who's retired, you know, from fighting crime. Because Gotham actually now has no crime. Like, he sucked.
Does the Zod tie in well to the plot? Is he the main antagonist?
No, he's not.
Okay.
But, you know, they couldn't use Henry Cavill. So in the original story, Superman never landed in Kansas. He crashed into Metropolis and he killed a lot of people. But the government claimed it was like a meteor that crashed. But they found him and they kept him underground under red light to keep his powers minimized. And so when Flash went into that world, when he did his Flashpoint, he saved him. But he was so, like, diminished and weak because he never got our son. So when they brought him out, it was the first time he got powers and he went, like, nuts. So in this, they used Supergirl. They found her in Russia. The Russians had found her. That's where she crashed. And they kept her under the red sun. And
okay. She got powers. She does look pretty badass in the movie. I didn't know who it was at first.
She's really good. Like, she's pretty good at, like, her fighting style is pretty on point. It's really good.
So are these characters, like, where are we in terms of, like, the creative? I know James Gunn took over as you know, pretty much a creative director type of position. Is he going to be, is Flash going to be part of that new, I guess, storytelling world? Or is this kind of the end of it?
Money talks. And I think there was a point where it was a possibility of bringing Ezra Miller back because he did a wonderful job. But because of what trails behind him with all this legal stuff and the bomb that it's happening right now at the box office, that it's not doing well at all.
Yeah.
I don't think so. We already know for sure James Gunn has taken over and he's already going to recast Superman. He's going to recast Batman. It's going to be Brave and Bold, Superman Legacy. And I think there was a couple other confirmed projects, but the other one he hired a director for, James Mangold, with Swamp Thing. So he has three directors, three movies guaranteed that are going to come out. I hope he takes it in a good direction. I like Zack Snyder. I like James Gunn. I hope he's going to do it well. The big problem with DC is leadership. Leadership. Like, the way they handle things has been horrible, horrible. The way they handled Henry Cavill, they threw him at the end of Black Adam, and then two weeks later, like, he made an announcement, like, I'm back as Superman. I'm so happy. And then they cut him. Like, how embarrassing is that? You know, like, that's just bad. So hopefully James Gunn can handle a big character like Superman the way he does these, like, not so popular characters like Guardians.
You know, just to close off the conversation, you mentioned the Snyderverse. At the end of Justice League, the Snyder cut, there's like these two short concept films that he just threw on that are insane, and I highly recommend everybody just go on YouTube and watch those. I don't know the name, but they're like 5 minutes each. One is Batman in like some distant future, and he's like, he got a shotgun and they're like running from something. It just looks so cool.
That's Darkseid took over Superman. And so it's like a dystopian future where Batman's trying to like fight Superman.
Do they actually play at the end of the movie?
Yeah. They're like 5 minute films that he shot them, but he just didn't, I guess there were concepts to pitch to the studio or something at the time. I'm not sure what the intention was with those. They're at the end of the credits, but they're probably on YouTube as well, full resolution.
You guys got me interested in watching this director's cut of Justice League now, because I'm always interested in seeing like a director's true vision of a movie after it comes out and it's like it tanks or whatever and the director like disowns it. But
huge difference in the Josh Whedon cut, like the Justice League Zack Snyder. He was filming scenes in his driveway because it was during COVID and they were trying to get it out for HBO Max. And he was filming scenes in his driveway to add on to the post-production. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was stark difference. Just like the color correction of the whole film is like night and day. Like Snyder's cut is much darker. They also had like a whole revamped visual effects package thrown in the film. Different scenes.
They changed the main villain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The main villain CGI was completely changed for the
movie. Yeah, yeah. It's worth a watch. Even as just like a study of filmmaking and the filmmaking industry, just to see the original studio approved and then to see the artist's vision after that, it's a good case study. Arnold. So Arnold, just for listeners, Arnold is a three-part documentary series that focuses on the life of Arnold Schwarzenegger from his days in weightlifting to Hollywood actor to California governor, and even, you know, most recently who he is as a person and his contribution to society. 73% on Rotten Tomato, 95 critic audience score, which is kind of how I feel. I really like this documentary a lot. Scott, you've been quiet for a while. I'm going to let you sort of lead this conversation. What did you think of Arnold?
I thought the Arnold documentary was really good. It really showed his mentality of how he started where he was all the way to get into be the big mastermind and claim to fame that he is, of really wanting to go from discovering he wanted to be a bodybuilder to go from where he was, where he grew up, and try to get his goal was to make it into the United States. And he eventually made it to that point with trying to plead and beg people and talk into people that he looked up to, which he eventually got the opportunity to work with, to reach the point of be eventually realizing he wanted to be the movie star that he became. And then eventually went, I'm bored, I want to become governor. And then he eventually, you know, ventured out to be using his philanthropy skills and everything to go back to movies and even give back.
I just want to interject real quick and just mention that he did not produce this documentary and he did not have final cut on the last piece. So this is, in today's sort of documentary world, that is extremely unusual. Usually the star always has a say on the messaging, always is on as an executive producer. So given that he had no creative control and this got out there is very unusual. Pedro, what did you think of the documentary?
I really liked it, man. I loved it. I thought, I just thought the narrative style was a good choice, with him sort of narrating his whole life. It sort of felt like I was reading an autobiography.
Totally. And he was very honest in his interviews.
Yeah, yeah. The way he speaks is kind of like just him narrating with the visuals over it and the tons and tons of like footage that they have of him in his early life. And it was just, it just all blended in so nicely. You know, it was very almost poetic, like the way the editing fit in exactly with his narration, and even some of the B-roll that they shot just fit perfectly to what he was describing. I've seen Pumping Iron before, and I've seen a lot of the Arnold action movies. Just like, I was always a fan of him growing up as a kid, like, you know, 90s action movie star. So, and the Terminator is probably, Terminator 2 is probably my favorite movie of all time. So
I'm curious what you guys, you know, we all grew up with Arnold as like our action hero, you know, one of our action heroes. Like, what are your memories of Arnold as when you were like, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old? Cause he was the big blockbuster movie star.
Yeah. Just that, just the big, that's just the action star, you know. And I'm glad they have a section on it in the documentary that touches up on sort of like him and Stallone, how they were like the go-to like action guys of the 80s, like,
yeah,
and the sort of like little rivalry they had between them. So that was interesting because I didn't know much about that story, but I did know, like I said, having seen Pumping Iron, knowing about him, I did know most of the his story, but there were a lot of unique things. Like, I didn't know the fact that he was, when he came to the U.S., you know, and he, for bodybuilding, he got into real estate, and that's really how he made his wealth. He was already a millionaire before he was even in his first movie, so he was established in that like Los Angeles community and with all the big shots over there and stuff. You know, he was mingling in that crowd beforehand.
Well, he made his own, you know, he was extremely ambitious and extremely driven. And I like the idea of, you know, him just, you know, this theme keeps coming back at him, like visualizing something, a goal, and then attaining it. And what you said about the real estate, that's him like getting close to the promoter of the bodybuilding contest. And then talking about merchandising his own stuff, not just being a merchandise marketing for the other guy's gym or promotion or whatever, and then going to business school and then getting into the real estate. So yeah, I feel like I knew broad strokes what his life was. I didn't know the details.
This brought it all together. Yeah. So that was really, really nice. And he's like, it's just like such a cool, like, story. Like, he says himself, it, you know, he's the typical fairy tale immigrant story, where he came to the U.S. with a vision, with ambition, and, you know, he made it all the way to the top.
Yeah.
And he's so like, he's so embedded in pop culture that you forget, yeah, you know, that his story is an immigrant story. So
he's all American through and through.
Yeah.
Well, there was many times where he decided to take the chance, and it could be life-changing or it could really hurt his career, and that were as many instances that it hurt him. There were even times, I think, I don't remember, you know, exactly, but there were times where he wanted to say a certain line and they were telling you, you're not a writer, so don't change the line.
Oh, that you wanted him,
and then he wound up doing it. And they went, oh, that sounded good. So he took a gamble.
No, that was the opposite.
No, it was the opposite. Him admitting he was wrong.
He admitted he was wrong, and Cameron, no, I mean, was right.
Well, eventually, you know, there was a lot of gambles that he did.
Yeah.
You know,
he went with his gut, especially, yeah, like, you know, the example I thought you were going to mention was the one about when he decided to run for governor. He had a talk with this guy, and he's like, the other guy who he wanted to run, and this other guy said, no, like, if you run, I'll back you. And then he took that as a sign, like, okay, I'm definitely.
Yes. There was also that, but there were many times that, there, you know, he went with his gut, and it, and 2 seconds later, he was kicked out of someone's office, of someone very important. And that, you know, delayed him, you know, but you never know, it delayed him 5 years to being back in someone's office to be the Arnold, you know, movie star that we know him as. My favorite part of, and I made me do a double take, is that Arnold told the story about O.J. Simpson, about who was going to be picked to be Terminator. And I loved that.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
So he said, you know, Schwarzenegger recalled that how no one in Orion Pictures was convinced that Simpson could pull off playing a robotic killer. And there was that pause, and then they moved on. I loved the dry humor. You had to, like, really pay attention.
He was extremely driven, but he was also blessed with a level of confidence that most people just don't have. He can go into a room and just be the center of attention. Obviously, he's like the best looking guy, and he's tall and muscular, but he did have that charm of like the everyman. I feel like that if you have that, you're kind of golden, and he relies on that a lot. At the same time, when he was out promoting the documentary, he was like, oh, pumping. There's an example where he tells the interviewer that pumping iron is like having an orgasm, but then he cuts the camera and he's like, you know, it's all bullshit. Like, he knows everything in life is just all bullshit, and he communicates that throughout all the time. He mentions it again when he's talking about his political career and maneuvering inside politics. It's all bullshit, and it's true. But nobody will tell you that. And when he tells you that, I don't know, you feel even more connected with him because he can be sincere about it.
But within all the positive parts, not to forget to mention about the infidelity that occurred, and that was focused on, and how he had, you know, this family, you know,
he has a son.
That was the you know, surprise turn, that at first he was denying it. Of course, eventually he couldn't deny it, and that, of course, you know, shattered his relationship with his marriage. But I was kind of surprised there wasn't that much involvement as far as his kids. They weren't, you know, providing any particular anecdotes. They kept them. I think maybe that was by choice. They made Arnold be the narrative, but at the very end, they included one of his daughters in it.
In the footage.
In the footage towards the very end.
But they also did not include his ex-wife, obviously, who was,
you know, no, I don't.
25 years or 20 plus years.
Yes.
She was not included. I mean, she could have obviously just decided not to participate and decided not to have the kids participate. That was,
I was surprised when you said he didn't have a final say, because it felt like that particular spot was kind of rushed at the end of his infidelity and what happened with his family. It felt like they spent a lot of time on, you know, the athlete, Arnold the actor, Arnold the politician, and then it was kind of like, oh yeah, and he cheated. So it was like,
that was kind of like the last, because it wasn't that recent, but it was a few years ago. So when you're looking at the broad spectrum of this timeline, which started back in the 60s, I think they said it was, you know, that was like the very last thing to happen. And after that, he kind of fell off. And it's now recently that he's like popping up on some like streaming movies and shows and stuff. But that one was kind of like the nail on the coffin for like an old actor or something to be like, all right, you're going to chill now. We're not, you know. We're going to put you away.
I think he does that. So that came while he was governor. That happened, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago while he was governor, and it came out, and he, you know, he even, you know, we see.
No, I think that was post-governorship.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It may have been.
During his governorship and run for governor, they were they didn't get into it, but there were like allegations of women coming out saying that he was
like groping them.
Like groping them and doing that stuff. And he, I think he, during his run for governor, he denied it, but at some point, like he admitted to it.
Yeah, he, I think, and
it was crazy because people still like voted for him and like didn't care about it, and some people even like protested for him. And at the end of the day, it had no effect on him running for governor.
Because the campaign only lasts for about 2 months. It was a short recall. But the divorce only the divorce was only finalized in 2021, so it was a little about 2 years ago. But they she filed for, Maria Shriver filed for divorce in 2011. So it was quite a long divorce time frame.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. It was kind of a media fiasco. But in the movie, he does come to terms. In the documentary, he does come to terms with that. Not just that, with the infidelity, but also like the accusations from women. And you see like his stance on those accusations from the footage of while he's campaigning, when he's speaking publicly, to when he's doing an interview to with some reporter later on, to the, you know, present day when he's talking to camera, and like how that changed, and he sort of owns pretty much all of that.
It's like he's at the point where he's accomplished everything he's accomplished in life, and he's just owning up to, you know, he's not hiding anything.
He felt very honest, and I mean, you guys touched upon some of the key points. Was Sylvester Stallone, I never knew about that, and his visualization to make him what he is. But his origin story was kind of like, it was interesting to hear about his father pitting him against his brother, mm-hmm. and him trying to make them proud, and that competition was bred in him when he was little. And it kind of festered into this thing where he just wanted the success. It's a really certain type of individual that can have that mentality, be so highly driven. And the visualization of it was such a big component. He visualized everything. He said, I am going to win Mr. Universe. And he visualized it. And then again with the acting, and then again with the politician. It was just, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think the one thing that struck me was his attitude towards his family back home, where he was just, you know, when his father passed, he had this mentality of just like, just move on, you know, like he just focus, you know, like I don't let that past distract me. Like, because he lost touch with his brother. I don't think he ever spoke to his brother again after he left Austria. And same thing with his parents. He didn't have a relationship with his parents. He forgot all about that world completely until he heard from someone that his dad was sick, and then it kind of came back. But he was able to turn all of that off and just focus on, you know, being
that's how
universe.
That's how hungry and ambitious, and you know, I've like watched other stuff about famous people and successful people, and all these people that reach a certain rank in society, they at some point they just like, that's all that drives them, you know?
Like, yeah.
It's like, no, by all means necessary, at all costs, they're going to get what they want.
Yeah. And he did. And I think today, so I've been following him on Twitter for a while. He's, you know, he's such like a positive force. You know, he always posts stories like he's a philanthropist.
He became like a social media guy, all this.
Yeah, yeah. For like a couple of years now, like he'll talk about, you know, big important things that are have like cultural or global relevance. But he'll also, you know, be at like a small event in California, just like helping out some, you know, some locals or whatever. So he's very much involved. He's really supportive. He just has like a very positive energy on Twitter, which is a place that thrives on negativity. So he creates like, he's one of the few that makes that place a little bit better. And you see some of that towards the end of the documentary. He talks about January 6th and Russia, and those, again, those are big global things, but he also does just like very small things that are much less noteworthy. Yeah. Any final thoughts on Arnie?
Whoever still has Netflix, are you going to check out FUBAR?
I did check out FUBAR. It sucks.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's cheesy.
I haven't seen it. I was actually thinking about watching it after the doc.
Yeah, you should. You should.
I'm sure a bunch of people followed up the doc with that because it's right there on Netflix.
I actually watched it before the doc because I didn't know the doc was out until one of you guys mentioned it, and I had already seen two episodes of FUBAR. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else right now. I'm just going to keep watching Black Mirror. I'm going to go through that. And
I would definitely say if you have the show Time Trial, definitely try watching Your Honor.
Is that with Bryan Cranston? Oh, it is, right? I heard it was good, yeah.
Didn't he retire? I heard he retired and moved to Paris.
I'm not sure.
I think he said like a couple more years and then he's done. Because of his wife, I think, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely read that. All right. Guys, we'll leave it there. Good show. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time.